From somewhere in Northeast Indiana, Mike Davidson lives. And now your host of the podcast, Mike Davidson.
For most couples, it's a romantic dinner, hotel getaway, maybe a spa, getting out of town. For me and the wife, it's a nice cup of coffee and going to tornado class. Hell yes, Mr. Robrup, thank you very much. It is me, it's Mike. This is Mike Davidson Lives. Thanks for downloading the podcast, hanging out with yours truly for the next half hour. Glad you can make it. Glad to be here myself. Saturday, tornado class. I think this is just an excuse for my wife to get out of town, and I don't blame her, because it's a bit nerve-wracking being a parent. So, you know, Saturday, the kids are going to be hanging out with Grandma, me and her, the wife, that is. We are going down to Greentown, just outside of Kokomo. National Weather Service in Indianapolis, I think, hosting a class about weather spotting. And, you know, when we were kids, each of us, we grew up in different towns. But my wife and I both found out from each other as we were dating that we both wanted to be meteorologists when we grew up. Maybe a little late for me now because I'm 44, but very interested in knowing how to spot storms. I don't know if we're going to get into tornado chasing or anything like that because, the vehicles are paid off, and that's usually when bad things happen to vehicles. But we're going to take the class Saturday, go down, and Just check out Kokomo, because that's the town that she grew up in. That was the town that I worked in for about a better part of a decade. And, you know, taking this tornado class. I'm looking forward to it. Very much so. By the way, RIP, late great M. Emmett Walsh, character actor, passed away this week, age 88. He's one of those, hey, I know that guy kind of guys. You might have seen him in things like Raising Arizona, The Jerk, Blade Runner. He was Harrison Ford's old boss in that movie. But he played a real slime ball, Private Eye, in Blood Simple, which was the first movie the Coen brothers ever made. And that's a great movie. It's a great movie. I mean, if you like their stuff on Fargo and No Country for Old Men, this was pretty much a forerunner to that. Showing kind of the dark style that they can embrace. I mean, they can do quirky comedy, no doubt, but they can also do real dark stuff. And Blood Simple, just a terrific watch. And M. Emmett Walsh was really good in that movie. And condolences to his family. Okay, let's see. Okay, another thing. Before I get too far along into the podcast here. Another thing that me and the wife like doing is, basically what everybody else likes doing, watching nostalgia pop culture, because, as you know, there are no new original ideas out there. And X-Men 97, first two episodes dropped on Disney Plus this past Wednesday, checked it out. There's all sorts of controversy, whether this thing was going to be way too woke in regards to, well, basically other Disney properties, all the other Disney properties. And, you know, a lot of back and forth on the internet. And, you know, checking it out, I have to say what I saw, I liked. It's a continuation of the old cartoon from the 90s that was on Saturday mornings, Fox. And that was a fun watch. You know, that was appointment television for yours truly, being a preteen teenager. But here's the thing, you know, and this is a minor gripe here. And again, I can't say this is the greatest thing I've ever seen, X-Men 97. It's just, it's solid. There's 8 more episodes that have to drop. And of course, Disney can screw this up at any time. When you're watching something that's a Saturday morning cartoon that goes through standards and practices, and then 30 years later, you're essentially watching a sequel to that, you can kind of tell that thematically speaking, it's a lot different. Wolverine actually got to say crap and damn in X-Men 97. Oh, no. Still not allowed to smoke a cigar, though. So it's a little darker, a little deeper, and I think, you know, they're basically playing with old comic book storylines. And, of course, the original cartoon did as well. But I don't know how it's going to jive with a show that was made 30 years ago. I mean, the showrunner got fired a week before this thing dropped. And there's been some rumors that he may have been doing some creepy things on the internet. Don't know how true that is. But was he making a true continuation of that cartoon? Or was he just like, you know what, I want to do this, do that. And if it contradicts anything that came before, who cares, right? So, you know, that's just a minor gripe of mine. It's a cartoon. I get it. I'm not going to get too worked up about it because, as you know, Disney's pretty much killed all my interest in other things. By the way, you see that George Lucas is now supporting Disney. He's throwing his weight behind Bob Iger, the man he sold the Star Wars properties to, and then kind of griped about when they didn't follow his story for 7, 8, and 9 of the Star Wars saga. He's saying that he trusts the true professionals and that magic isn't left to the amateurs. Like, if you want good quality entertainment, you go to the professionals against George Lucas, who created Star Wars with not much more than American Graffiti under his belt. He created a whole universe of characters. And now he's saying that Bob Iger and company are the best thing for Star Wars. Yeah, this is why I don't look back too fondly about the prequels. I know that when the Disney sequels came out, people were like, well, at least George Lucas did the prequels. The prequels were dumb. You know, Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, still solid in my opinion, have aged very well in my opinion. And anything that Disney has done has just eventually turned into, well, shit. By the way, keeping with that, The Acolyte, the new upcoming Star Wars series for Disney Plus, getting review bombed on YouTube, getting more negative thumbs than positive thumbs, more thumbs down than up, thumbs up, and that's a great sign for where Disney is going with Star Wars. Again, the original trilogy of Star Wars, the less Star Wars, the better. The less watered down, the better. So don't get hung up about what Disney's doing, because George Lucas is okay with it, apparently. And pay no attention to that old man that was yelling at a cloud. Okay, Bruno Mars update with MGM, because that was kind of the crux of the last podcast, that allegedly he was in deep $50 million with the casino, and so his residency is going to continue until further notice, until his kneecaps mysteriously stop working. MGM says that Bruno Mars does not owe $50 million to them, and this is an outrageous lie and all this other stuff. I haven't really heard much from the Bruno Mars camp. So, okay, maybe he doesn't owe $50 million, but, you know, where there's smoke, there's a possible flame. And Bruno, again, in the past, has shown that, well, self-control is not really his thing. So is there any truth to the matter that Bruno Mars may be in deep with the casino that he's working for? Don't know. I would have to lean yes, but I find it very interesting that a guy that can make that much money can blow through that much money. That's why money's not really the solution to all your problems, because if you don't have a good handle on all your problems, that money's going to go away anyway. So what's the point of having it? Okay, so there's Bruno Mars in Las Vegas. Maybe something there, I don't know. I got into some trouble online recently. No, I haven't been banned or blocked yet on Facebook. But I guess concertgoers for this big festival in England are dismayed that there aren't any big rock acts on the bill. Like, it's all pop and all that stuff. And I just said, you know, rock is dead. Rock music as a genre is dead. And, of course, that went over very well. I had more thumbs than laughing faces for the comment up until recently, where a wave of 40 laughing faces overtook my 38 thumbs. I made this comment Thursday of last week. The tidal wave finally came Tuesday, 5 days later, just to show you how wrong I was. But a lot of these butthurt fans are talking about, well, you know, Tool sells out shows, and Iron Maiden sells out shows, and Judas Priest had a number one album in all these countries. Those bands are all legacy bands, I would like to tell you. Like, 30, 40, 50 years of experience being rock bands. And they've got fan base that's pretty well built and also aging out. My point is that there aren't any of these new rock bands that are going to take the genre in new, exciting directions. No, you're left with your Imagine Dragons, your 21 Pilots, your Greta Van Fleets, and your Falling in Reverses. Not a good look. You know, a lot. There's this video, a friend, because I was kind of griping about this on another account, and I had a friend show me this video by this rock fan from about a year ago talking about how all of these big bands for these festivals are all bands that have been together for about 20 or 30 years. And there's just nothing exciting. And I'll link it up on the podcast page. I did like most of this. Where I disagree with this guy's assessment about the genre of rock is saying, if you want to help make it a better, you know, new bands more well-received, start listening to them. If, you know, instead of just sticking with your tried and true band. Well, again, rock fans get older. And if Pearl Jam and Nirvana came out today, would I relate to them as a 44-year-old man the same way I would, say, like, when I was about 13 or 14? You know, life's a lot different from when you're a teenager to when you're an adult, right? So for me, as somebody who's getting closer and closer to 50 every day, to listen to a bunch of 25-year-old kids in a band, you know, singing about their problems, are they relatable to me? See, a lot of your music taste forms when you're younger, and that's just how it is. Your preferences, your likes happen as you are developing, as you're growing. So the problem here is twofold: the quality of the bands and the fans. And a lot of the fans, as I will argue, are more interested in hip-hop and Taylor Swift. Rock music, it's just not doing it for anybody. And you can say, well, you know, I have a friend who's got 37 face piercings, and he's really into this band called Goat Blood. And it's like, okay, fine, whatever. Is Goat Blood ever going to headline a Super Bowl halftime show? Is Goat Blood ever going to headline a U.S. tour with supporting acts? Or is Goat Blood going to be a supporting act for Metallica, who's, you know, about 60 years old? That's the problem. Rock music is just... and again, this video, for the most part, I disagree with him about, you know, older fans taking up the slack. But this guy does hit it on the head about festivals and some of the other problems that rock bands have relating to younger fans. So, you know, you can give it a watch and tell me what you think here later on. Okay, so this video goes viral on the internet. I saw the story. This came out just down the up the road, hour and a half away from us here in Fort Wayne, Toledo, Ohio, over the weekend, I think St. Patrick's Night. John Mellencamp, formerly Cougar, he's doing a tour, and on video, you know, he's taking time out of playing a song to tell, you know, a story about my grandma. And a fan heckles him from the audience saying, hey, just play music. And John Mellencamp, of course, graciously looks at the guy and calls him a, you know, cocksucker. And, you know, things get tense, uncomfortable, and he's threatening not to play 10 songs now. Went, just because of that comment, I want to cut 10 songs from the set. Yeah. Oh. And they play a little bit of a song, and then he just stops and walks off the stage. Now, he eventually comes back, and he finishes out the show, but how awkward is it for fans out there who pay good money to see a good show, from a 72-year-old man yelling at cloud, John Yellen Snap. You know, and the thing is that, you know, the fan that was heckling him wanted to hear his music. It wasn't like, hey, you suck. I mean, yeah, it was rude to interrupt him telling a story. But if you're paying money to go see John Mellencamp, you want to see John Mellencamp. There's such a degree of narcissism to what Johnny Cougar did here. Like, yes, they're there to see you, but they're there to see a good performance. It's not all about you. And so for him to throw this temper tantrum and just walk off stage, very unprofessional. Of course, he probably doesn't give an F. But I've heard from quite a few people that I know, who had parents or friends who worked in construction or installation of furniture or whatever, that have done business with John Mellencamp over the decades, and they just say he's not a very happy person. I'll just leave it at that. But, you know, there's just no graciousness to it. You know, people are there to have a good time, and he storms off like a little baby, and he doesn't appreciate the fact that there are people there to see him play. He could have just said, shut up, and kept telling the story, or, you know, he goes, hey, hold on. No, he had to, you know, make a big deal about it. And it's kind of funny, because right now I'm reading the biography of Jim Morrison, Nobody Gets Out of Here Alive, and Jim Morrison, for all of the legend of this guy being deep and spiritual and smart, very narcissistic in his own way. I mean, countless shows. I mean, you know, I'm about 2/3 of the way through the book. Countless shows where he shows up wasted, inebriated, high off of something, barely able to stand, slurring lyrics on stage, showing up late. You know, the other three guys in the band, Dinsmore, Krieger, and, Mazarek, they were of the 60s. They indulged in shit, but they also knew that if they wanted to get paid, they had to show up on time. They had to play their music. They had to go out and tour. They had to go record albums, and Jim Morrison was just this big, destructive man baby who relished in this love from people that were never going to meet him. John Mellencamp, kind of a lighter version of that, is what I'm arguing. And in Mellencamp's not the only person that's like that. But it's sad that a guy like that can't be more appreciative of his fan base and just feels entitled to do whatever the hell he wants on stage. But that's a rock musician for you, and you probably shouldn't try to live like a rock musician. I wouldn't advise it. Try not to live like Aaron Rodgers either. He's kind of a weird, flaky guy. And, you know, he's said and done some stuff that I roll my eyes at and go, okay, whatever. But this the story that CNN ran with not too long ago, it was a report on their own cable news network. You know, this is real news. Talking about, yes, I did the finger air quote. Don't stop listening. But they said that there was an alleged conversation or two where Aaron Rodgers believes that Sandy Hook, the massacre at the school years back, was a red flag operation, was staged. It was never real. And they ran that story like that. And Aaron Rodgers has come out and said, hey, no, I've said, I believe Sandy Hook happened. I've never said anything that's being alleged like this to me. And it's, you know, he's basically trying to say, I never said that. Stephen A. Smith on ESPN, of all people, says, okay, now that Aaron Rodgers has come out and said that he hasn't said it, the burden of proof now lies on CNN. Okay, where's your evidence of this? You know what I mean? Like, there, if this is something that happened, you need to prove that Aaron Rodgers said this privately. And these are conversations in private. This isn't something he said in an interview. Okay? So, if between the two of them, Jimmy Kimmel threatening to sue Aaron Rodgers for one crack that never said anything about Jimmy being on Epstein's list, he said, I bet Jimmy Kimmel doesn't want the list to come out. Or CNN saying, yeah, he said, Aaron Rodgers said, Sandy Hook was, not real. Who do you think has a better chance at suing here? I would say Aaron Rodgers. I mean, this is the thing, too, is Aaron Rodgers does believe in a lot of kooky conspiracy theories. And I know there's a lot of journalists that like to like finger point and say fake news, fake news, fake news. But if this story turns out to be fake news, wouldn't that make it a conspiracy? And you're spreading this stuff. And it could be dangerous to put the words of that somebody did not say into their mouths just so you can get a rating point. You know what I mean? So it's okay for cable news to allege and make outlandish claims about somebody, but you can't say one smart-ass line about a failed comedian who hosted the fourth lowest-rated Oscars in that telecast's history. Yeah, there's a little bit of hypocrisy there. So, rare time I agree with Stephen A. Smith. Not necessarily with Aaron Rodgers on a whole lot, but Stephen A. Smith is right. Burden of proof is on CNN. CNN has to prove this now. Otherwise, it's not a real story, and it's a lie. Okay, so there's that a pseudo-controversy with football star Aaron Rodgers going to college football for controversy. Caden Proctor, formerly of Alabama, now formerly of Iowa, currently with Alabama, I guess after the season wrapped up back in January, he decided to hit the transfer portal, went to Iowa, collected some of that sweet NIL money. 2 months later, no practices, he's transferring back to Alabama. And people are outraged. How can you do something like this? How can he take advantage of the system like this? And my answer is, because he can. Because you guys thought it was a great idea for college footballs to get paid. College football players, college basketball players, any athlete in the collegiate system to get paid like professional athletes because you thought they were being taken advantage of. Never mind the fact that they were getting full ride scholarships, a lot of them. These guys are now cleaning up and getting money where they can. It's all about that GTA. Okay? God. I mean, there's no shock here. No shock whatsoever, and now the genie's out of the bottle, and you can't get it back in. And there's going to be more things like this. And if you think it's ridiculous when you watch the NBA with their coaching carousels, just wait until this whole NIL transfer portal really gets into high gear here in about 10 years. You're going to see a lot of college coaches in the hot seat all the time. All the time. And what's funny is this was supposed to be something that evens out the playing field, so to speak. You know, yes, this will allow other schools to compete. Yeah, but Notre Dame and Alabama and Duke and North Carolina and all these schools that are big in either basketball or football or whatever, they have deep pockets and they can make the NIL work. They can make people stick around. Iowa's a Big Ten school, right? Caitlin Clark seems to be doing pretty well there. But a football player playing at Iowa, probably not going to get the same esteem as somebody playing at Alabama. So there's that. It's a big mess. And ironically, it was Nick Saban that talked about how bad the NILs and transfer portals were going to be before he decided to call a career, step out and say, you know what, I've done all I can. Well, now we can kick back and see how terrible this whole thing really is. This is terrible. Let me get my reading glasses on. This is out of New York State, and I feel bad for this woman. I truly do. She lives in New York, but you know what? Maybe this is what opens the eyes of some people in that blue state. Then again, who are we kidding? But this should make you nervous, even if you don't live in New York, if you're a property owner. Because it kind of shows where things are going when you get more government involved. Mm. All right, so a New York City property owner recently ended up in handcuffs following a fiery standoff with alleged squatters who she said she's been trying to boot from her family's home, as tense video footage shows. Adele Andaloro, 47 years old, was nabbed after changing the locks last month of this house that she owns. On the $1 million home in Flushing, Queens, that she said she inherited from her parents when they died. It's enraging, she said, of the squatter saga. It's not fair that I, as the homeowner, have to be going through this. Andaloro claims that the ordeal erupted when she started the process of trying to sell the home last month, but realized the squatters had moved in and brazenly replaced the entire front door and locks. They did this. They changed the locks on the door that she owned, the home that she owned. She said she got fed up and went to her family's home on 160th Street in New York, Queens it is, with a local TV outlet in tow, February 29th, and called a locksmith to change the locks for her. A heated, caught-on-camera spat with the people occupying the house quickly unfolded. Police were eventually called and escorted two people off the property. In New York City, this is where it gets stupid. In New York City, a person can claim squatter's rights after just 30 days of living at a property. What? Under the law, it is illegal for the homeowner to change the locks, turn off the utilities, or remove the belongings of the tenant from the property. By the time someone does their investigation, their work, and their job, it will be over 30 days, and this man will be in my home, said Andaloro. So think about this. These people snuck into her home, changed the locks themselves. Of course, this home was probably empty because, well, her parents are no longer alive. They're dead. She's trying to sell it. She's trying to liquidate it. She's trying to get some money from this. The utilities are in her name. She can't turn them off because the squatters are there. So from what I understand from this story, they're getting free electric, free water, everything. They probably don't have to make any house payments. She can't do anything about it. This is New York State squatters' rights. What the hell is that? If you own, and the thing is too, in this video, she's waving the deed around. She owns the home. It's in her name. They should not be there. They are trespassing. They are trespassing. And so, you know, when you have things like the Bill of Rights, you know, your liberties, you know, if somebody tells you, okay, yeah, you know, the right to bear arms, Second Amendment, it's going too far. You know, there should be some limitations on free speech, First Amendment. You know, that's bullcrap. That's bullcrap because those things allow you to defend things like your home, like your property. You know, here she is, you know, on camera, no less, waving around the deed to the home, proving that she owns it. And she's in hot water because of these squatters. They claim to be there for 30 days. And by the way, how does a squatter prove that they've lived there for 30 days? Because, you know, nothing's in their name. You're just going to take their word for it. I mean, this is a bullshit law. And I don't care if you live in blue state, California, red state, Texas, somewhere in between, somewhere in these United States. You don't have to live in New York State. You just have to know government, and you just have to know that, you know, elected officials get into office because they make crazy promises to be popular. They will say and do things that might infringe on your rights to own things. And being a property owner is a big thing. Owning something is a big thing. Either because you worked for it or you inherited it from somebody who worked for it and wished it to be bequeathed to you. And now you have this thing like squatters' rights in New York State. I mean, it's a scary thing. It's a scary thing. One of many things to be concerned about. Always beware. Man, that's scary stuff. And finally, you know, this is kind of scary. TikTok, I know that I really haven't talked too much about TikTok. That's an ongoing saga into itself. But this is not a challenge, although this could become a challenge. I think this woman just has a TikTok channel. And she's like a concerned mom. So this is somebody being a responsible person on TikTok, which that's a rare thing, isn't it? She's talking about how, like, some kids at the school that her kids go to got caught with nutmeg in their backpacks. Well, what's the big deal? Well, you know, we're going to home ec. We're going to make some confectionery stuff. Talk to the home ec teacher. No. We're not making anything that needs nothing. Apparently, you can get high sniffing nutmeg. Yeah. They do say that the high is very short-lived and that you have the hangover from hell after coming down from this. Like, minutes later, you're like, oh, yeah, I feel so great. Then you feel like shit for the rest of the day. So that makes you think twice about, drinking a pumpkin spice latte or a pumpkin pie for Thanksgiving. But, you know, could you imagine, though, having to administer Narcan to some basic white girl knocked over because she just couldn't even? Nutmeg. Kids are getting high off of nutmeg. This responsible mom on TikTok brought this up, and now, because of her efforts, sadly going to be a TikTok challenge. Now she tried. And with it all said and done, I'm done. Until next time, stay fresh, Jeff.
You've been listening to Mike Davidson Live. Be sure to check him out on social media. Like him at facebook.com/mdavidsonlives. Follow him on Twitter. Look for @DavidsonLives.